This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. By the time I get to the end of this introduction, at least one member of the baby boom generation will have turned 65. And every 8 seconds for the next 16 years, that will continue to happen. And the generation associated with protest and counterculture is looking at quite conventional forms of retirement on golf courses, cruise ships, or in retirement homes. But Bolton Anthony wants to change that. He created Second Journey, a Chapel Hill nonprofit dedicated to redefining the way we look at our oldest population. And Bolton Anthony joins us now. Welcome to the program. Good to be here.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here.
How did Second Journey get started?
Second Journey got started when I hit 55, had finished a pretty intense 6 years managing the 1898 commemoration, and I looked at my dance card. It had one dance left on my midlife, and it had been an idea I'd thought about and worked on, and I'd do it every once in a while. Then I'd get a real job, and I decided if I didn't tackle whatever that idea was, it wouldn't happen.
So what was the idea?
Well, the idea we originally called Communities for Imagining the Future. That was grounded in the sense that it's powerful conversations that open us to discover the way into the future, the new ideas that we need. And I, in exploring that after 55 and 1999, I came across things in the culture that were going around, conscious aging, positive aging, sort of key figures of that. Ram Dass, who's got a second act of his own, Reb Zalman, Schachter Shalomi, a way of looking at later life as an opportunity.
And how does that look? Because, I mean, you know, people are really, I mean, I said golf courses and cruise ships, but people are engaged in much more than that these days because so many of us are just entering that age. There's just, you know, isn't there some of that going on? And how would this be different? What are you looking for? How would your vision look on the ground?
Well, we are in the midst of a longevity revolution. So we've always had long-lived individuals. We have never had an old generation. And that's what's happening. It's a gift of years. It's an unanticipated time. It's our gift because of incredible advances over the last 100 years in medical science and public health. Barbara Kingsolver in Prodigal Summer has a wonderful quote. She's got a 75-year-old feisty elder who's told she's not acting normal for her age. And she says, up until the Civil War or something, if you got sick, they slapped you with leeches and measured you for a coffin. Then along comes somebody inventing 6,000 ways to cure everything. And here we are, old and wondering what to do with ourselves. So we live in a new time, and you can approach that simply by playing safe. You can look at these years as simply an extension of midlife. And so you can repeat yourself. And a lot of people do that when they remarry. Sometimes that's simply repeating the previous thing. They enter a new career. Or you can recognize that this is a different time and that you're entering a new life phase with new life tasks. And you can pause. You can take a deep breath. You can follow the poet Rumi's advice. You can sit down and be quiet. You are drunk, and this is the edge of the roof, he goes on to say. Or there's a sign down the hall in this building where they're renovating the flat, and it says attention required beyond this point.
But it sounds to me like you're saying this could be kind of tough medicine for those of us who have worked all of our lives, we've had jobs, we've been driven by all the exigencies of life, including trying to keep, you know, hearth and home together, to keep families together, ourselves well, and do well at our jobs. We've been driven. So now you're saying, sit back, think about what it is you really wanted to do. And that's, after 60 years of this mess, you know, not easy.
Well, you've been driven, but something starts to happen. All of those roles start to fall away. You know, the kids are gone.
Oh, yeah? Go ahead.
the career is ending. You also start to get hints that, you know, there's a potential physical decline. And so you get a sense of a season of losses. And you can look at that as, you know, the inevitable decline. And, you know, in the political arena, we can throw our hands up and say this bulge in the population is going to, you know, thread the social safety net. Or you can look at it as really an opportunity to do something different and something new. And I think the invitation that we get as we enter a different phase is an invitation to – I'm an English major, so I can do something that social scientists would think was much too simplistic. But it's an invitation to mindfulness, service, and community. It's an invitation to inner work, spiritual deepening, and then taking that experience out into the community, giving back, and to community. And I think what Thomas Berry would have called the great work, the care of the earth and of all living things and of the generations to come. And we don't, traditional cultures had that understanding of the role of elders. We don't have it. We have very little sense of that potential.
Well, let me stop you there, because isn't that, I mean, that's in some ways how I think of retirement. People who volunteer, lots of volunteers now, they're able to do some of the things they weren't, and that's precisely what they're doing. They're getting out there and doing volunteer work.
And that's, I'm in full agreement with that. That, on the other hand, there are people that are, you know, sitting beside a golf course, mm-hmm. or as Ted Rozak said, content to feed their retirement into a slot machine at the casino. There's more than that. And the boomer generation, you know, which at every stage of its wild ride through the life course has transformed the culture, it is doing that with the way we look at old age, with the options of where and how and with whom we grow old. So there's a lot of ferment, both around, I guess, what you'd call the physical containers, the bricks and mortar that make up the spaces in which we live and either are designed well or designed carelessly. So they either encourage human interaction or, like the suburban world that we created in the 50s, they discourage it.
Well, now, bear in mind, a lot of boomers sat out the revolution by the golf course, too, like even in their teens and 20s. But so let's talk about what it would take, because your book is called Aging in Community. So I take it from looking at the book and reading some of the essays in it that you're not just offering a self-help book or an exhortation to stay busy and to get involved. That's part of it. But what you just talked about, the bricks and mortar, the structures that would encourage that kind of behavior, what does that look like? What does it take in terms of brick and mortar, and how are these communities important in realizing some of the dreams that you talk about?
Well, there are a lot of models. The book is about both the architectural models that are out there, as well as the social architecture, the way that the networks that keep us connected. So in terms of the actual architectural models that are out there, elder co-housing is a concept. There is interest, I think, in a couple of areas in the Triangle in creating that kind of a community. There's a keen interest in bringing what is called an elder artist colony to Chapel Hill. This is something innovated originally out on the West Coast in the Burbank Elder Artist Colony. One of the two developers at Southern Village is interested in replicating that in this area and then more widely. There are things like Golden Girl Homes, which are shared housing. They're pocket neighborhoods. They're naturally occurring retirement communities. And there's effort to take existing spaces. I live in Falcon Bridge in Chapel Hill. It's a suburban community built in the 70s. It's got some newer features. It's got different types of housing. But it doesn't have any sort of commercial core, which you would find at a place like Meadowmont. It doesn't have porches, which are, an architectural feature that actually creates community, you know. And so there's challenges of how do you take that space and how do you create a kind of social architecture that allows people to come together.
Is this changing now? Is there a kind of market demand for these kinds of spaces? And you mentioned a few that are developing. Are you seeing more and more across the country? Because, you also point back, and I want to talk about this, Sun City was the kind of model retirement village for the kind of working class folks, for our parents, for instance. It was like work, 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 stop, sit in the sun. And that was the vision of what retirement was going to be. And everybody expected retirement to last maybe 6-7 years, maybe 10. We expect to live longer now. Is it the model, and are we seeing more of it across the country?
Sun City is the old model, and when you survey boomers or the generation under boomers, retirement is a place to stop and do nothing and play isn't what they want. Retirement is as a opportunity to do new things, as an opportunity to, when we get to this age, we've created a persona that has allowed us to succeed. We've created roles, and quite often it's deflected us from what's central to our interests. So retirement becomes an opportunity to find that core, to begin new things. I think of the way Michelangelo talked about how he created David. He's asked, well, how did you find David? And he said, I just removed everything that was not David, so that later life is not this season of losses. It's this sloughing off of everything that is inessential that we gathered about us to make our way in life to end up at some sort of essential core.
That you can see how attractive that is from a personal standpoint, what it might mean for me to kind of get down to that core. How about socially? How about in terms of the interaction and the kinds of change that people can bring? I mean, you think about it, we sort of got involved, didn't we? You and I, we started the revolution in part because we had the energy and the vision, but also we had nothing to lose, face it. And then we got stuff to lose, and we got sidetracked. No revolution. Now that we're older, we got a little bit of wealth to lose, but hey, we're only going to be around for a few hours. Do you think this, do you think there's a way in which people can come back together and actually become a political force for change and not just for AARP?
The phrase you use, nothing to lose, is the exact phrase that Maggie Kuhn, the founder of the Grey Panthers, uses when she talks about elders, whom she calls society's futurists. And they can do it because they have time and because they have nothing to lose. You can take risks at later life. You know, maybe if you're worried about your nest egg and you're worried about extending it to 100, maybe you can't. But It's a lot more interesting taking risks.
Short live the revolution, I say. You got something going here. So what do you do? Do you give talks? And what kind of what's the next thing? If I wanted to sign on, what do I do, Bolton?
Well, you got a couple of opportunities. The website is www.secondjourney.org. And we do have a book, Aging in Community. But more importantly, we April 11 through 14 at the Friday Center, we will be doing what we've called a visioning council as a way of distinguishing from a conference and a workshop, where much more didactic. This is an experience where you come together in a facilitated conversation. The assumptions are that you've got rich life experience, that you can, in fact, by sharing, discover others. New ideas can emerge, new initiatives can emerge, and it's a model we've used across the country in the early, in the 2003 through 2007. So it's a link on the main website to a full description of that. There is also a Friday evening presentation that's part of that. This is at the Friday Center. The presentation's open to the public, and you'll get more about that on the website as well.
Sounds great. Bolton Anthony, thank you so much for being with us. Bolton Anthony is the founder of Second Journey, general editor of the book Aging in Community. The website is secondjourney.org. That's our program for today. Thank you for listening. Our website, stateofthings.org. Programs directed by Alex Granados, produced by Isaac Davey Aronson, Sean Wynn, and Nicole Campbell. Christina Blythe is our intern, Robin Copley, the technical director, Brent Wolf, the news director, and this is North Carolina Public Radio. It, as you know, is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.